You're listening to the Yizzy Research Podcast, hosted and created by me, Imani, a researcher. This is the podcast for people who research people. In this episode, I speak with Lindsay.
I'm currently working at a design and strategy agency in the West Loop in Chicago called Magic and Might. And my primary role there is to really support designers and strategists by helping to design, execute, and analyze and report on kind of small sample qualitative research studies. And I'm usually doing that in the tech and automotive space. Before this, I worked at DScout, which is a company that offers a platform for researchers to connect and run remote research studies. And I was part of the kind of former consulting team called The Studio. And so while I was there, I helped conduct small to medium sized kind of qualitative studies like I'm doing now. And those were in kind of entertainment, tech, social media space. I'm also really passionate about inclusive research practices. I've done some writing and some speaking engagements around best practices for inclusive sample recruitment and digital design inclusivity more broadly. So that's a little bit about me.
Lindsay is going to talk to us about some best practices for perfecting your research portfolio. And a huge part of your work is supporting other researchers in creating their research portfolios. Many of us assume that we have a clear idea of what a research portfolio is, and we do, like it's a portfolio of your research, but it's so much more complex than that. And that's what we're going to talk about today. To you, what is the purpose of a research portfolio?
So to me, the purpose of a research portfolio is to communicate who you are as a researcher. The portfolio does what your resume essentially can't do. It shows a glimpse of your workflow and of your process, the way that you tell stories and how you've made decisions during a project, how you confront problems or challenges. It also can be a way to really showcase your personality and highlight your values or what's really important to you, your interests. It's a document that puts a lot more of the kind of big picture of who you are beyond the kind of facts of where you've worked and for how long.
What is included in a portfolio? I think for me, even after being a researcher for a few years now, I still have to think about what should I actually put in this document. I mean, you would think that I would know for sure, but there isn't really a set formula. And a lot of us struggle with trying to figure out what to put in it. So what is included in a portfolio?
Sure. So what I like to include in my research portfolio is I'll start with a brief kind of introductory section where I give, you know, maybe a picture of myself and explain some of the work I've done, but in kind of a visual way. I like to include kind of some of my additional skills and experiences that go beyond the kind of job requirements for the role that I'm trying to apply for or roles. So in my case, this includes things like graphic design or illustration or video editing. Those are skills I bring to the table besides the work that I do, you know, the research role. And so I like to use my intro to kind of give a picture of all that I can do in a broad way. And then I also like to include, obviously, case studies. And these are going to kind of showcase your best work, but I'll get into that here in a little bit. But including some of the stuff beyond those case studies, that introductory section, in my opinion, really shapes the reader's understanding of who you are before they hit kind of that project by project breakdown.
I like the idea of an introductory section. I've adapted my intro many times. I think when I first created my first portfolio, there are a lot of soft things about me that didn't really have a lot to do with work, maybe things that could strike up a conversation with the hiring manager. But as I've progressed, I've made it a lot more, I guess, Spartan. It's like, hi, I'm Imani, I'm a researcher. Here's the table of contents for what's in the portfolio. There are three or four cases. Here are the titles of the cases. Here you go. So I like that the introduction can also flex. Like you mentioned that you keep, you include a picture and just like an overall summary of who you are. So people know who you are before they start to read, which I think is important as well. And when you're creating your portfolio, there are many audiences to be mindful of. Which audiences do we have to be mindful of when creating a portfolio?
One audience to consider, of course, is the company or companies that you're going to be sending the portfolio to. I think in my mind, a portfolio is a document that has a job. It's not just a document that exists out in the world to broadcast who you are to everyone. at least in my mind, it's a document that is focused and is speaking directly to a specific company or, you know, companies within an industry and kind of within a specialty or a niche space. So I like to kind of consider the industry that these companies are in, the types of work that they're doing, the types of skills they want to see in the kind of job posting. These things can inform the case studies that you choose to include if you have many to choose from, the order that they're shown in, and the way that you talk about your the way that you talk about yourself in your introduction if you choose to include a personal introduction. Another audience I would definitely say to consider when making your portfolio is just busy people. I've been now on the hiring side and had to sort through hundreds of portfolios for folks applying for a role. And I, you know, that's something that's happening on top of these kind of hiring folks regular jobs. It's a burden they take on in addition to their full-time workload a lot of times. And so they have minutes, seconds sometimes to look through your portfolio. So it needs to really very quickly and succinctly deliver your message and your content without kind of lagging in the introduction or being weighed down by too many case studies or too dense of case studies. So that's something to also keep in mind.
There are two things that you said that really stood out to me. I love that you said that your portfolio is a document that has a job. It doesn't just exist to exist. It has a really clear purpose. And I think that's easy for some of us, especially for some of us who have been doing research for a while. It's easy to forget that your portfolio isn't just there to collect dust. It has a job, it has a purpose. It should be updated and refreshed as necessary. So I like that, a document that has a job. The second thing that you said that I really like was that these people that are reading your portfolios are very busy people. That reminds me of a few moments in the past where I was just helping other people with their portfolios and someone had like a 60 plus page portfolio. And I told them, I'm like, no one's going to read this. This is like almost like a novella. No one's going to read this. But they were convinced that someone would. I'm like, no one, they're not. Yeah. So I think keeping your portfolios robust and fresh, but not too much. How many cases is enough? How many cases should someone include?
I typically recommend 3 to 5 case studies containing your best project work. The goal in my mind is to showcase a breadth of experience, meaning the industries that you've worked in, methodologies and tools that you've used, scale of studies that you've run, and the types of deliverables that you've helped to create. You know, 3 to 5 is a good amount that can showcase that diversity without getting too long.
Yeah, I think that's a really good recommendation. Also thinking too, we're thinking about the audience and them not wanting to read too much, but also for us as the creators of the portfolio, us not wanting to be too stressed out trying to put together a portfolio. So I think 3 to 5 hits that sweet spot. What does a case include?
Yeah, so in my opinion, a case study includes some basic parts. And I do want to note, this is all my opinion, of course. So I really welcome other opinions, and it does come down to personal choice. But in my mind, in order to tell the story of a project, you need to start with some context, a brief overview of what your goals were or what charge you set out with, to give the reader some context about why you were there. Then you'll want to kind of summarize the research activities that you did. This is where you're showcasing the types of research that you've done, the different kind of modalities that you've worked in. So you'll want to be able to kind of help the reader understand the tools that were used and the scale. Then you'll want to give an overview of kind of the analysis and synthesis process, how you made meaning out of the data. Was it a quantitative analysis? Was it qualitative? Did you tag data or was it a word cloud? You know, there's all different ways. You want to really catalog some of those. And you'll also want to be throughout this kind of keeping or making note of how your team made decisions, how you made decisions as a researcher. How did you get from start to the next point to the next point? When did things change? You know, what were those critical inflection points? And then lastly, I like to include something really unique to that project. So that can be things like some interesting findings or insights. That could be some frameworks or, you know, territories that you defined. Maybe it's visualizations or diagrams or even special deliverables like a poster or a book. And so you could even include things like project impact. What happened after this project ended? Where did the research go and who did it help? What did it support? Maybe a new feature was rolled out. So those are the kinds of things. It can be different from project to project. It doesn't have to be a cookie cutter template. And you'll want to be able to highlight what's relevant to each project in each case. So that's kind of how I would think about a case study, is a little storyline arc.
You touched on this a few moments ago. How do you decide which cases to include, especially for those of us who have been doing research for many years? We've worked on a lot of different projects at different companies of different scale. And how do we decide what to actually include?
To decide which cases to include in your portfolio, I kind of have a method I follow. I recommend making a spreadsheet or list, a table, of all the projects that you could see yourself including, essentially all of your contenders. You'll want to jot down the details that you can recall or that you have written down about each of these cases, the project overview, the details I spoke about in the previous response, so that you can scan side by side and compare these projects, see which projects use which deliverables or which methodologies. You'll want to note things like the client or employer that you did it for. And this will allow you to see where there's the most material. It's really, really helpful if you have an ongoing list of projects that is updated as you complete them, but not everyone has that. So some will be limited by what they can recall in detail, because if you show something in a portfolio, there's a good chance you'll end up talking about it in an interview. So oftentimes the first gate that you have to pass through is, what can I remember well enough to talk about? After that, once you've got a list of projects that you could include, you'll want to go see what assets or materials you have to support the storytelling. Do you have a deliverable, a copy of it? Do you have screenshots of your documents? Do you have access to any of the kind of project materials, the analysis boards, the sticky notes? Do you have photos? All these different assets or materials that you could include to tell a story. You'll want to see what you have and kind of get it into a pile. Once you do a pass like that, it allows you to see two things. One is, as I mentioned, where you have gaps in content or material that might prevent you from including a project in a portfolio. And then two, what combinations of the remaining projects that you do have enough content material for might satisfy or support the job posting that you're looking at. Again, that audience that you're trying to craft this portfolio for, to speak directly to them, their company, their industry, you may choose different projects than you would for some other company or industry. So one thing I actually have done in the past is have a master portfolio with like 5 to 10 case studies across all different industries. This is a pretty aggressive approach, so I don't recommend it broadly, but it's something I've done. And then for each job, if I'm applying in jobs in radically different industries, to cater a portfolio that has the best 3 cases that speak to this job, and then a different portfolio to this job. So you don't even have to be limited by one portfolio works for everything and everybody. If you're still in the phase of your career where you're not quite sure and you're trying different things out, maybe it makes sense to have a portfolio with more cases that you can really curate down. So those are some ways that I generally kind of organize a list of projects and make choices from them. But having data about your projects like qual versus quant, scale, tools, things like that will help you make those choices.
I love the idea of having a master portfolio, especially for those of us, I'm sure as many of us listening do, we apply for research roles, not in just one industry. Like, I know I've done research in media, in tech, in government, and those all require very different portfolios. So I like the idea of a master portfolio. As I was listening to you speak, it's obvious that storytelling is a theme throughout how you approach crafting a research portfolio. And that makes sense because you're a researcher. We love to storytell. Is there a storytelling template for your portfolio that you recommend?
The storytelling template that I would recommend is actually to just take a step back and for each case or project, think about like, what are the major beats from the reader's point of view that would need to be in this story for them to understand what happened. So sometimes it's helpful to just take a step back and from a fresh perspective, say, if I knew nothing about this project, this client, this work, what is the bare minimum story that would be required for someone to really get what happened and what we learned and how we learned it? So that's kind of an approach I would recommend. But in terms of template, I would refer back to kind of the list of kind of plot points that I named earlier, you know, project overview, research activities and methodology overview, analysis and synthesis overview, and then kind of some unique findings or deliverables. Is it reliable, the main points of a story for a research project, if that makes sense?
The best products are built by listening to your customers. But without a great tool, capturing quality insights is nearly impossible. DScout was built to solve this challenge. Whether you're running moderated or unmoderated research, the DScout platform helps you recruit high-quality participants, manage unlimited concurrent studies, and share insights and video clips in minutes. Stop overpaying for questionable research. Instead, partner with DScout, the company trusted by Spotify, Lululemon, Google, and more. Visit dscout.com for all the tools you need to boost your insights program. It does make sense. And as I'm thinking about all the things that are included in a portfolio, I'm trying to contextualize a portfolio with your cover letter, the resume, and also with your LinkedIn, because they should all be telling your larger professional story. And also the interviews as well, because you're going to talk about the portfolio, as you mentioned a few moments ago. However, when it comes to LinkedIn, I'm always confused and always thinking about how to represent my experience on LinkedIn if I obviously already have a resume that the hiring manager has most likely seen, a cover letter if they ask, and also if we've made it to an interview stage, they've already spoken to me, they've seen my portfolio, but LinkedIn is here and LinkedIn does exist. How is a portfolio different from LinkedIn?
I think there's a lot of overlap between LinkedIn and a resume, less with LinkedIn and a portfolio. So to me, a portfolio is very different from LinkedIn in that LinkedIn is more akin to a resume. You've got your work experience, your school experience, your volunteer work or mentorship. And it kind of breaks down the facts about your life and career experience. I've uploaded a few project deliverables to LinkedIn from school, but not comfortable putting portfolio content directly on there. As I mentioned earlier, I think a portfolio is a tool to speak to a very specific audience. And so I tend to avoid putting anything that doesn't speak broadly on my LinkedIn. And so I treat LinkedIn very much like I treat my resume, except it's a resume that is interconnected and highly visible to people who I didn't send it to. So to kind of wrap all of that up, I think I see LinkedIn as a place to kind of have your resume plus. It's a place to kind of turn a resume into a networking tool, while a portfolio is a document for this really refined, narrow audience, kind of more private.
How does that change for people who include their research portfolios on their LinkedIn profiles? I've seen some people do that where they include their resume, a generic cover letter, and their portfolio on their LinkedIn. What do you think about that?
I don't think there's a wrong way to do this. I personally treat a portfolio I've seen other people use a portfolio in this way to speak broadly. I think in that case, it's almost more like a website. The distinction in my mind is that if your portfolio is broadly visible, you lack the ability to really curate how you're telling the story and what skills you're highlighting. And so in my mind, it becomes less powerful because it has to satisfy so many. I guess the exception would be that if you're already working in a niche and you know you're going to stay in that niche, then maybe it makes sense to just have your portfolio visible because it doesn't need to cater to different audiences. It's only ever catering to one audience, but that's not really my use case. But I would never tell anyone that the way they're doing it is wrong because they're all just different pros and cons.
That makes sense. And for those of us who are not artistically inclined like me, how do you make your portfolio look nice if you're not a designer or a visual person?
There are a couple of options to make your portfolio look nice if you feel like you're not a creative or visual person. One is to find examples of other portfolios or presentations even online and do some research and make yourself a mood board. Assemble a series of inspirational images that give you ideas for slide designs. And so that way you can kind of recreate them as a starting point. You can combine things that you like to make something that's truly unique and yours. There's even, you know, templates or slide designs built into things like Google Slides, or, you know, all kinds of layouts available on the internet these days. So I would definitely recommend leveraging the content that's just floating around on the internet to as a starting point. And I want to make a side note about style here. I think a mistake I see a lot of first-time portfolio makers make, maybe mistake is too harsh, but something I see first-timers do is choose a portfolio style or design that is very loud. And what I mean by loud is it has like a bold choice of palette, color palette, or font, or, you know, the layout is really unorthodox and it's making a big visual aesthetic statement. And I think you don't really have to do that. I think a portfolio doesn't have to look like, it doesn't have to represent you the way an outfit does. I think the work has to speak for itself. And so I think you can be pretty clean and simple and straightforward with your portfolio design and layout, using a simple font, you know, simple color scheme, not going nuts on the design elements or the layout. And that makes your portfolio more evergreen. It appeals, you never know the design sensibility of the person you're giving this document to. And I would love to say that human beings don't make discriminating choices based on aesthetics like that, but they do. And if you have this really big style and the person you send it to is turned off by that, that could potentially get in your way. And there are some benefits to choosing kind of a simple style, but if that's your personality, seriously, don't let that stop you. But the other, if none of that feels approachable to you, you can always find a graphic designer online and work with them directly. This isn't an option that everyone has access to because you either need to know a designer and pull a favor, or you need to pay a designer. But it is an option that's on the table and one that I'll mention because they will be able to do an amazing job of making your portfolio look polished and professional.
So next, so we talked about how you can make your portfolio look nice, especially for those of us who aren't so artistically inclined. Where should your portfolio live on the internet?
In terms of where portfolio should live, I keep mine in Google Slides. I know some folks turn their portfolio into more of a website, and some folks just have like a PDF that they share. It really depends on how protective you are of the material inside. You know, some projects you can share more broadly. Some are hidden under lock and key. And so that can be an influence on where you keep it. You know, I have some case studies I can only show in person or like screen sharing. But, you know, if I need to show those, it's happening in more of an interview setting. So in terms of portfolio, I think for researchers specifically, I think it's okay to just keep it in Google Slides or in a PDF format and not go, I don't know that you need to have a website is where I'm getting at.
Yeah, I agree. Especially for people on a budget, just having like Google Slides or Microsoft PowerPoint that you converted to a PDF, that works fine. I've used that as well. So I definitely agree there. And you already started to touch on this very little a few moments ago. What are the pros and cons of a password protected research portfolio?
So the pros of protecting a research portfolio with a password is that your content is theoretically protected from being shared broadly without your consent, or that you could potentially be including materials that are under NDA. The cons of doing that, protecting with a password, is that it could potentially annoy or slow down the person who is receiving your portfolio in the process. They'll have to find a password and put it in, which then becomes its own kind of thing. I think that con is pretty negligible, but I personally just keep my portfolio in Google Slides and then use sharing settings to control who can see it. So whether you're applying a password or tweaking sharing settings, it's pretty easy to control kind of who has access. Another kind of potential downside of putting it on your LinkedIn portfolio or LinkedIn page, I'm not sure if that comes with password protection, but.
And in preparation for an interview, especially an interview that is focused on your portfolio, how do you rearrange your portfolio for that type of interview?
So to rearrange my research portfolio for an interview, I really like to narrow in on the most relevant case studies. As I mentioned, I kind of have this master portfolio that I cull down to, here's the three or four that I really feel good about showing this one potential employer. That's kind of how I approach it. But I think keeping it short and focused really helps. I also tend to put my strongest work first so that I know for sure they saw it. Some folks recommend putting your strongest last so that you finish on a high point, but you're taking the risk that someone sees your first project and then stops looking and never sees your best work. So I tend to fall on the just in case, stack it best to less best, but you wouldn't want anything you would consider your worst, but best first is how I would arrange it.
When presenting a portfolio, what questions do you anticipate the interviewers will ask in that type of setting?
Yeah, so when I'm presenting a portfolio, I'm expecting interviewers to ask me to tell the stories behind these projects, to kind of be engaging with the materials and digging deeper than what I've shared on the slide. I assume they're not going to have me, or that they don't want me to read off what's on the slide and just do it live. So I show up with kind of speaker notes that dig into the most interesting details, share additional anecdotes and behind the scenes stuff that I couldn't fit on the slide. You know, I expect people to ask about my process and how I personally played a role in this work, what my personal influence looked like, as these are typically team projects and collaborative efforts. And so sometimes just showing a project case study, it's not immediately obvious what was your contribution versus the work of the team. So that's something I expect to clarify.
And that makes sense. And now I'm thinking about maintaining your portfolio. When was the last time you edited your research portfolio?
The last time I edited my portfolio was way too long ago. It was back in 2021, like right after I got laid off at the end of 2020. I'm actually planning another portfolio refresh this year.
Yeah, no shame there, no judgment. I think I updated mine sometime last year too. So yeah, it is. But yeah, now that I have all these cool tips from you, the master portfolio, storytelling. So thank you. I'm getting so much from this myself. And how often do you recommend refreshing your portfolio?
I typically recommend refreshing your portfolio every 1 to 2 years or whenever you get an amazing new project under your belt. This all, of course, depends on your bandwidth and your free time and how much interest you have in being aggressive about keeping up with your portfolio. But general best practice, I'd say, is to keep it fresh and filled with your best work, especially if you're using the strategy that I mentioned earlier, kind of keeping that larger set of case studies going. You'll want to just add to that and kind of make sure that it's fresh, because you never know when you're going to get a job posting forwarded to you from a colleague or when you might get recommended for a position by someone you know. And you really want to be able to react in those moments with your best work and not be caught off guard and kind of forced to share something that's not as good as your current work.
You had already touched on this a little bit earlier. How do you handle sensitive or confidential information in your portfolio without compromising it?
Yeah, this is a great question. A lot of the research work I do is highly confidential. And so to handle sensitive or confidential information in my portfolio, the way that I've approached it is to do a scrub through the materials to remove any instance of client name or logos or anything like that that was in the materials. So I use stock imagery instead of actual representative screenshots if we're doing something like usability testing of an app. I may show a stock image that's representative of the industry rather than the screenshot of the app screen that participants originally saw. You know, you can describe the company and the industry that you were working in broad terms. For example, let's say you did a project for a meal delivery service like Blue Apron. You could refer to that in your project overview as a meal kit delivery service, and then talk broadly about the product or service, the topic, speaking at an industry level, that what consumers want and need from that space. None of that has to reveal anything about the client. And if you're just talking kind of broadly about an industry and a type of offering within an industry, it's actually pretty easy to get around kind of the NDA if you just avoid any mentions showing up in your imagery or your copy. It's super doable. It takes a little bit of work, but it's totally doable.
Yeah, it is. Do you have any final thoughts to share about research portfolios?
The last tip I would have is you really want to practice presenting your portfolio and talking through these projects long before you're ever in a room with a real interviewer. Get a friend, get them pizza, and make them interview you, and do it more than once. You want to have this stuff written down. You don't want to be talking off the cuff. It just gets messy. It really, really helps with confidence if you can go into an interview like feeling like I've told this story enough times that I no longer have to feel nervous. My face doesn't flush bright red when I talk about this project. That really, really helps a lot. So I would really recommend when you make your portfolio to also have a separate kind of moment where you make some notes about how you would talk about each case study. Have it all on hand and ready to go in your speaker notes, ideally, and then practice it.
Thanks for listening to the Yizzy Research Podcast, the podcast for people who research people. I'm Imani, the host and creator. Visit yizzyresearch.com for podcast show notes and information about my UX research coaching program. Again, that's yizzyresearch.com, Y-Z-Z-I, research.com. This podcast was produced by Whisper and Mutter.